David Falk has represented more than 100 NBA players, and he famously was Michael Jordan's longtime agent, and he joins us now to talk about The Last Dance and other things. Good morning, David. How you doing today?
I'm doing well, thanks. How about yourself?
I'm hanging in there. What'd you think of The Last Dance?
I thought it was terrific. I thought it was a really insightful look behind the scenes at the kind of interplay between the players and the coaches that you really never see as a typical fan unless you're, you know, very, very privileged.
You know, we heard a lot about Michael Jordan's intensity throughout this series, his, as he put it, his competition problem. Compare how he was on the court to the way he dealt with you as a client taking advice.
Great question. So I would say that really successful people all have that kind of competition problem. You don't get to the top by, like, being passive, you know. And clearly, in the time period covered by the doc, the principal period, the last year, 97-98, you know, Michael came back from baseball. He was 31 years old. He knew he wasn't going to play till he was 60, so he had a very limited window to win. And his intensity clearly increased because of the importance of winning to him. As a client, you know, I started with Michael when he was 21 years old. He was extremely inquisitive. He was soaked up information. I looked at my job for Michael, which will surprise you and your listeners, not so much as a deal maker, but as a teacher. You know, my job, I thought, was to teach him how to make good business decisions. You know, for example, the very first decision we had to make was with the shoe deal. Not simply who to pick. Should we give all the rights to one company for shoes, clothes, hats, bags, sweatbands, socks, accessories, or should we split it all up? And he asked me, what's the difference? I explained to him, you'll make more money in the short term splitting it up, and you make more money in the long term if it works integrating it. And over the course of his career, in terms of the length of contracts, you know, how it all fit together to form an integrated marketing plan that clearly worked well because, you know, many, many years after we started, he's still with Gatorade, he's still with Sara Lee, you know, Brad Jordan is an iconic brand with an incredible market share. And so, and he listened. I mean, I'm not saying we never had differences of opinion. Of course we did. But Michael's an incredibly respectful person of people who are good at what they do in any field. I'm not just talking about sports. You know, if you were a musician and you came to him, he'd be intrigued. What made you a good musician? If you were a stockbroker and he met you, he'd be intrigued. You know, what made you a good stockbroker? And Michael was incredibly respectful of me and my time. He didn't have to be. He was freaking Michael Jordan. But I say he and Patrick, my two biggest clients, were by far the most respectful. They never pulled my chain because they knew they had the power at any time they needed me to say, hey, this is important. You need to come out and sit down. And I would. And so they never did that unless it was important. And, you know, they're probably, you know, Michael clearly made my career. I mean, he's the biggest name in the history of the game. He stood with me throughout my entire career. And I went through a lot of iterations, Bob. You know, I started out at ProServe, one of my own in 1992, and formed Fame. I sold Fame in 1998 to SFX. It turned around and sold to Clear Channel. And he was incredibly loyal. And you couldn't dream of having, forget about talent. You put that off on one side. Of course, if as an agent, I don't think there'll ever be an agent in the Hall of Fame. To me, the opportunity to represent Michael Jordan is like being put in the Hall of Fame. And for that, I am, you know, if I can give you a very interesting comparison, I started representing Michael Jordan when I was 33 years old. I represented a lot of really top players before he came out. I worked for Phil Ford from North Carolina, who's the National Player of the Year in 78. I worked for James Worthy from North Carolina, who was the number one pick in the draft his year. I'd been a junior agent for Arthur Ashe and Stan Smith. I was working for John Thompson. It wasn't like he was the first good player we ever had. But because the things we did the first few years were unprecedented, a rookie having his own shoes. No one had their own shoe back in 1984. Kareem didn't have one. Magic didn't have one. Bird didn't have one. Dr. J didn't have one. You know, people say Clyde Frazier had one. He really didn't. They named a shoe, the Puma, a shoe he wore, they named, and they probably didn't pay him 10 cents for that. You know, no one had started out with a program to have your own shoe like a golfer or a tennis player would. And he had tons of endorsements right away. And I was cocky. I was probably unbearably cocky when I was 34, 35, because I knew we were breaking new ground. I was really proud of it. And I was too young to sort of put it in perspective. Jerry Krause, who's probably way older than I, you know, was a very insecure guy who was screaming for credit. He wanted credit for the Bulls' success. And when you represent Michael Jordan, when you have Michael Jordan on your team, you're not going to get a lot of credit because people think that your next door neighbor could win a championship with Michael Jordan. And that's really not true. It's really not true. And so Jerry, because he was insecure, you know, screaming for the credit, all he had to do was say zero. If he would have said zero, six rings would have spoken for itself. When Pippen last night said that Krause was the best general manager, if you hooked him up to a lie detector test, he would never say that. He doesn't believe that. But he's trying to take the high road, you know, a little bit later in life. And so it's a contrast. So Michael was amazing. And I learned after about 3 years, wow, you know, just being on the Jordan team is an honor. You don't have to tell everyone how great you are. You don't have to brag about all your exploits. What you've done will speak for itself. Just try to be like him. Michael's extremely humble off the court. On the court, he's cocky, he's brash, because he's trying to psychologically intimidate both his teammates and his opponents. But he's a very, very low-key guy off the court. He's fun to be with. You know, if you're playing golf, he'll talk some trash. But he's just an amazing friend.
David Falk, Michael Jordan's longtime agent. Let me get Dave Bennett in on the conversation here. Dave?
Yeah, David, good morning. I wanted to get back to the shoe deal, which you alluded to earlier, and as we saw in one of the early episodes, it was Michael's mother who actually persuaded him to get on the plane and go meet with Nike. Did you have any idea at the time that Nike would become as big a brand, thanks to Michael's involvement, as it was to become, given where they were in the market at that time?
No, zero idea. And that's exactly why it was so appealing to me, because Converse was the official shoe of the NBA, as well as the official shoe of the 84 Olympics, which is the last college team to play in the Olympics. And the official shoe at North Carolina. They had Dr. J, Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, Bernard King, Isaiah Thomas. They were loaded. Dr. J. And Adidas, you know, was one of the largest companies in the world. One of the senior partners in my firm personally represented the owner of Adidas. And we had tons of clients with Adidas in tennis, like Stan Smith, Raul Ramirez. You know, they were loaded. And I wanted some place where someone would aggressively try to market Michael, not simply as, quote, another member of the Chicago Bulls, but as a very exciting player who could exceed the boundaries of what the Bulls stand for, which, frankly, in 1984, the Bulls weren't the Celtics or the Lakers. They weren't the Bulls that they'd be in 1992 or 1997. You know, they were a slow Tom Borwinkle team that didn't win a lot of games. And so I had a very close relationship with the head of marketing for Nike. We did tons of deals together. And I said to him, if you want this player, you're going to have to really step up and do it differently. You have to create his own line of products for him as if he were a tennis player or a golfer. And Converse wouldn't do that. Adidas couldn't do that because the owner had died and they were in a sort of a period of disarray. And some of the smaller companies that wanted to do it, I didn't think had the resources. So no one had. Listen, if I knew that Michael would make the impact in his very first year and sell $126 million worth of shoes, instead of asking for $1 million a year, I would have asked him for $1 a year and caught 50-50 on the royalties. But, you know, but no one knew that.
Yeah. David, are you still in touch with Michael these days?
Of course. I mean, Michael's a great friend because he's an owner. When Michael became an owner in 1999, the rules don't permit agents to represent players and management. And so, you know, I had to step aside and stop officially representing him. But we have a lifelong friendship. We talk frequently, play golf. I'm a member of Grove 23's golf club. And, you know, I don't offer him advice on Charlotte. If he asks me for my opinion on things, I offer it. You know, one of the things you have to learn as an agent when you take a young player on, you know, Michael was young back in the day at 21. Today the kids are 18. Is that you reach a point, if you do your job well and you teach them how to make good decisions, you have to let them make the decisions. You know, you have to give them a certain level of independence. And Michael's 57 years old. He's bright. He's successful. And if he needs my advice on anything, he knows I'm here from 24/7. But I don't have to call him and say, hey, you drafted this guy. You know, why didn't you draft that guy? You should have traded for this guy. You know, that's available to him whenever he needs it. But I don't, you know, I respect where he is in his life.
David, do you know what Michael's review of the docuseries is? Have you talked to him about it?
You know, we've texted and talked about it a little bit. I mean, you know, the doc was phenomenal. You know, obviously, as someone like Michael, who's a compulsive perfectionist, I think it could have been better. I'll give you a couple of examples where it could have been better. I didn't understand why there were so many reporters in the doc who don't know Michael very well. The ones who do know him very well were Wilbon, who's a good friend, Mark Vansell, who knows him the best because he covered him and wrote 5 books with him, and Ahmad. You know, now I love Dave Aldrich. I love Jay Adonde. I have a lot of respect for Rick Thielander. When Rick Thielander, it's a great example, suggests that Pippen was upset because he was the 112th ranked player in salary in the NBA. First of all, back then, they didn't keep track of that. That's a current analytic. So Pippen didn't know whether he was 112 or 57, you know, or 300. And honestly, I'd be stunned if that mattered to him. What mattered to Pippen, what irked him the most, was that Jerry Krause, in searching for his Jordan, someone, he didn't draft Jordan. Rod Thorne drafted Jordan. I love Rod Thorne. Rod Thorne is in my top 10 favorite people, executives in the NBA I've ever worked with. He's classy, smart. He's just a great guy, and we're really good friends.
David,
Jerry wanted his.
Oh, go ahead,
Jerry,
David.
Wanted
I'm sorry.
His own. Jerry wanted his own Jordan, so he goes to Europe and finds Kukoc, who was not exactly a sleeper. He was the best player in Europe. He was back then what Doncic was a couple of years ago coming over. He was the dominating player in Europe, and he paid way more money for Kukoc than for Pippen. And Pippen never forgave him for that. I think it was, you know, I think it was not a great move, but it's so Jerry because he wanted to prove that his find, you know, that no one else would sign was special and was going to transform the Bulls. It was part of his philosophy that players don't win, organizations win. And obviously history has proven how foolish that kind of philosophy is because the Bulls haven't won, you know, a single title since Michael left 22 years ago. Now, John Paxson, who's a dear friend of mine, you know, they've tried. I love Jerry Reinsdorf. We have a client on the Bulls now, Otto Porter, who's one of the best players, and we hope that they'll come back to championship form. But it's not organizations that win. You know, it's getting players that can play together and having a harmonious relationship. And the fact that Jerry disrupted the harmonious relationship that he had with Phil and preempted the chance to go for number 7 could be an unfortunate part of his legacy along with the 6 rings.
David, we don't often get to hear from you. I think ESPN could do a 10-part docuseries on you. Really appreciate your time this morning. And when we get off the air, I need to talk to you because my agent can't seem to get anywhere on the Bob Surratt softball shoe. So maybe we can discuss
that.
Have a great day. Thanks again for chatting with us this morning on WGN, David. All the best to you.
A lot of fun. Thanks.
Thank you.